We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is the Dale and Keith Show. Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Andy Hart, WEEI.com, is alongside, and joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is NFL Network draft analyst Lance Zierlein. You can follow Lance on Twitter at Lance Zierlein, Zierlein. Lance, good morning, and how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, thank good. You. You're, at least the one that we've been able to find, your most recent mock draft came on February 4th. Before I get all excited
right.
about who you had going to the Patriots on February 4th, have you made any changes to your predictions in this regard?
Well, yeah. My mock draft's typically what I do. I look at it as a true exercise. And, the first one, I like to lay some things out, just kind of how my ratings a little bit are, I work off of my ratings a little bit more because I don't have any information of what teams are looking at. I like to approach each team with the idea of what the team might do here based on needs and things and how the board is set up, how teams, draft typically, what is their draft history, what is draft, do they draft traits, do they draft production, things like that. And so, So as my mock drafts move along, I start to fine tune them with a little bit more knowledge from teams and from sources. And the one thing I do that I will do though is my early mocks will have some pretty good insight into here and there into some players who are maybe overrated, where you keep saying, well, how come I'm not seeing this player in anyone else's mock? Or you may say, how come I see this player in everyone's mock, but Lance doesn't have them in there. Well, I'm grinding on tape on all these guys. I got to write up the NFL draft profiles. And so there's some guys that are going to be in mock drafts early on that I already know are going to fall out of there. So I will just say that mock drafts change a lot. And my second mock will probably not look a lot like the first one. So before you get too excited, yes, know that it's probably going to change quite a bit. I can't even remember who I had for the Patriots. Who did I have?
Justin Fields.
Oh, that's right. So I do think – so here's the thing. If you are excited about getting a quarterback, what's going to have to happen – and that doesn't mean the Patriots might not try to make a move up from where they are. But I also think that you still have Deshaun Watson. You still have potentially Sam Darnold. There are still some pieces that could fall. Jimmy Garoppolo maybe could get traded somewhere. Who knows? So you could still see – a shifting of the quarterbacks, where a team who has a quarterback need maybe doesn't need a quarterback if they trade for Deshaun Watson, for example. If a trade is made for Sam Darnold, maybe a team decides that they don't love this quarterback class as much. But based on what I know right now, I think if there is one guy that would fall, I think it could be Justin Fields, actually. I think that's the guy. I think Justin Fields is the guy who could fall, because Trey Lance is going to blow people away with his intellect, his football intellect, and his preparation. Mac Jones, I don't love Mac Jones, but, I think there is something there with Carolina at 8. And then Zach Wilson, I think the Jets are kind of starting to lock in on Zach Wilson as a second quarterback. So if you do the math on that, it could lead to a player like Justin Fields slipping a little bit. And if that happens, New England may get a little froggy and jump up a couple spots.
Lance, if hypothetically Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Tua were in this draft. So take away everything you saw from them in the NFL, but you just saw, you know, their college resume, or really this time last year, what you were thinking about those guys. What would the top kind of five quarterback, what would that big board look like if those three guys were joining this group?
Well, I can do that because I actually have – I've already put draft grades on all of them. So it would look like Trevor Lawrence, one. Two would be Joe Burrow. Three would be Tua. Four would be Zach Wilson. Five would be Herbert.
Okay, interesting. All right.
But Herbert's grade is basically the same as Justin Fields and Trey Lance for me.
Okay.
So the popular name in New England lately, just in terms of a talking point, has been Mac Jones. Obviously had a great year, the ties to Saban. Is he going to be available? Is he not available after eight, somewhere in there? How do you break down what Mac Jones is bringing to the NFL?
So that's a really interesting point, because we know about the Saban New England connection, and he is an incredibly intelligent quarterback in terms of being able to process quickly and understanding the offense. I think when you break him down, you do have to, it's impossible not to acknowledge that he's driven a Corvette. And Tua drove an even nicer, you know, Tua drove a Bugatti, basically, what he's had around him. But it's not much different for Mac Jones. He's got the team that won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line in college football. Every single one of those offensive linemen is going to be drafted and play in the NFL. You had, obviously, Devontae Smith, who's the most polished wide receiver we've seen in years. And, I mean, just extraordinarily NFL-ready and polished. Jaylen Waddle, incredible speed. Michi, he's got good tight ends that you don't talk too much about right now. And then he has Najee Harris, a better version of Najee Harris than Tua had. So, you know, he's had such a high horsepower engine to drive, is that he hasn't faced the level of adversity that he will face with New England, or frankly any team in the NFL. You're just not going to have those kind of advantages at so many positions in the NFL. And so I think what you have to do is I went and looked at when he was under pressure. Show me what he looks like under pressure. So I went and watched all of his snaps under pressure, and he moves around okay, but I did see some flare-ups of poise issues at times when he was under duress. And I think that anytime you see that, that's a concern. Now, most players do, and I can tell you Fields and Trevor Lawrence were really poor throwing the football this year from an accuracy standpoint when they were under a lot of pressure. So it's not unusual, but that's what you have to do. We know there's a huge advantage for Mac Jones. We know that. But you want to ask yourself, what will he do when he's a Patriot? What will he do with this wide receiver, that wide receiver? What will he do if we're going four wide and he's able to get the ball out quickly? Does he operate well with quick game? Do we see him, you know, is he able to get to a second and third read effectively and quickly? I mean, the Patriots will be asking all these questions. Every team will be. But I do think that you can look at him, and so I'm going to compare him really quickly to Jarrett Stidham. Two guys coming out of the SEC, Auburn, Alabama. Stidham has better physical talent. He has better. He throws the ball prettier, nicer throw, all that. But Stidham really struggled with poise his last year at Auburn because he had a bad offensive line, and a lot of times that can just rattle you to your core. And Mac Jones hasn't had that yet, so you're kind of flying blind a little bit with Mac Jones, to be honest with you, because you don't know what it's going to look like when he does face that.
Let's turn our attention to maybe more mundane matters. If the Patriots, and Andy Hart's dream scenario here is that at 15, they go and take a wide receiver like Jaylen Waddle, and at the end of the first round, they trade back into the first round and grab their quarterback for the future there, like maybe Trey Lance or somebody like that. Is that an option, do you think?
No. Trey Lance would be long gone, and frankly, Jaylen Waddle will as well. So you want to talk about a dream scenario.
Jeez.
I mean, that's not even going to be close. Trey Lance would be gone probably inside the top eight at the latest, and Jaylen Waddle could be gone by six. So that's going to – Jaylen is probably going to shoot up the board. You know, believe it or not, there's an outside shot that Devontae Smith is the third wide receiver off the board, which is crazy to me. But, I mean, that's how good these three wide receivers are. I think more than likely the positions you're talking about with the Patriots draft, you would have to have you'd have to move up a little bit for your quarterback or your wide receiver, and I don't see the Patriots trading up for a wide receiver. Definitely doesn't show up in their history, draft history under Bill Belichick. So I would say more than likely where you're drafting pass rush in the first, that's when the pass rush is going to start coming off the board. And there's some high upside, low floor guys. Like, there's some guys that really have some athletic talent that I think Bill Belichick is going to like there in the middle of the first, possibly even an outside shot at a corner if that was something he wanted. But then at the back end of the first is where you could find a wide receiver. And there's a kid that I love by the name of, if you wanted to move up, Elijah Moore from Ole Miss is somebody that I like a lot. But I don't know that he would, I don't know that you're talking about moving up for a wide receiver that's under 6 feet tall. I also don't know if you see that. So it's tough. You can really look at the draft this year and kind of compartmentalize where different positions of different players are going to go. And it gets a little bumpy at the back end of the first. So offensive line and pass rush is where the middle of the first round you start to see a run should start somewhere around there on those positions.
Well, speaking of wide receivers, the Patriots, for the first time under Belichick, took one in the first round a couple of years ago, N'Keal Harry. Are you surprised he has struggled? He did horribly.
Not so
horribly.
Good.
Did you see that coming, or is there a chance in your mind that he could turn things around?
No, I was really concerned about N'Keal Harry, and I called a guy that I used to speak with, God rest his soul, Daryl Drake, who was a wide receiver coach my dad had coached with at Arizona, and Drake was highly respected around the league. Was a lot of NFL places, and we were talking, and I asked him, because I was so worried about N'Keal Harry, and because he couldn't separate, he didn't get open. And I asked him, I said, Coach, what do you do with a guy like that? He's big, he can jump, he's going to test well, but he's physical. And Drake didn't know the kid as well yet. He would later. It was like in January, so you get to know the players, leading up to Combine. And he said, look, I don't know a lot about him, but all you have to know is if he gets to the right situation with the right quarterback, a lot of NFL quarterbacks can throw guys open. You can work on guys, learning to separate inside the box, meaning like what a lot of times DeAndre Hopkins will do is learning how to be physical at the catch point so you create your own space. And what I was really worried about is he just had a tendency to drift and just kind of nonchalant up the routes. And, I think separation is such a major factor. And I'm always curious, Jacoby Myers, I didn't love that pick. I mean, he's not a separator at all. And N'Keal Harry, you get too many of these guys who are the exact opposite of what Wes Welker was and what Edelman was from the slot. You have too many guys at Dobson. He wasn't a separator. Like, I've been really kind of puzzled that New England has gone with so many guys that really aren't known for separating when you watch their tape. And I think at some point, you're going to have to help your quarterbacks by getting guys who get open. You can't make them throw into such tight windows all the time.
So, Lance, you crushed my dream of a wide receiver and a quarterback in the first round.
Right.
Let's just jump over to the other side of the ball, Bill Belichick's side of the ball. We know he likes versatile athletes, and a guy that, as we start to learn more about these other prospects, Zaven Collins out of Tulsa just sounds like a Patriot to me. Almost reminds me of Jamie Collins with, you're not sure where he's going to play, but he's super athletic, good defender. Is he a guy that might make sense for New England?
Yeah, he is. He's a giant. He's like 260 pounds, but he's extraordinarily athletic. He moves great. The linebacker, in terms of a Patriot-style player, I think Jason Oway from Penn State has some value. The guy that probably makes the most sense is, I'm forgetting his name. He's the linebacker from Notre Dame, who is kind of a linebacker.
Right?
Yeah.
Jeremiah something or other, yeah.
Although, I also look at how the Patriots draft, because the Patriots are pretty – you can't predict who they're going to draft, but you can predict what kind of players. And I know he wants intelligent players, but he also has a typically, Diatric Wise, Flowers, longer arm edge guys who are big and have size. The Patriots have always had models that you could study. Yep. And so – unless he gets away from some of those models, a guy that I think could fall because of some some character concerns off the field is Micah Parsons. Let me tell you what, this is one of the most talented players in the NFL draft. And if there's a team that I think believes that they could handle a player like that and that they would get unbelievable value, it would be the Patriots. So if he starts to slide and you want to see a linebacker that is a major high-impact inside linebacker who has the versatility to cover if you need to and to blitz, then you're also looking at a guy like Micah Parsons from Penn State, who I think is maybe the sixth best player in the draft, fifth best player in the draft, but I do think he could slide for some concerns about a hazing incident he was involved with at Penn State.
I think you mean Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa.
Koramoa, yeah, that's it. And he's a guy that hits like a freight train, can really rush the passer, but he's in the 220s. So you have to be okay with an undersized linebacker who has cover talent over the slot. I mean, he's like a hybrid safety linebacker, but nowadays, I mean, you really have to start looking at the NFL differently. I don't think you can compartmentalize it so easily. Find guys who do multiple things, who have hybrid talents, and just make sure that you know what their home base is. And for him, I think it would be a weak side linebacker. But then utilize them and deploy them in such a way that it makes your defense harder to predict, which Belichick's always been great at that, and harder to match up against. We always hear about matchup offensive players. Well, it's time we start seeing some more matchup defensive players.
Finally, before we let you go, and I know you know your job at NFL.com is draft analyst, but I'm curious, based on what you saw this year, were you as surprised as most to see how far Cam Newton fell in 1 year?
I mean, not really. That's kind of a tough question because you remember after the first week, everyone wanted to proudly pronounce how underpaid he was and what an amazing talent he was. But, you know, it fell off certainly after the COVID and everything. I think Cam, anytime you're dealing with a guy who has a shoulder issue, Cam already wasn't a real accurate quarterback, big arm, but not the most accurate guy. And now you are throwing to a team of players who don't separate. And we talked about that. And he has a history with a shoulder issue, and you throw in, you throw in the COVID stuff. I think it's a big, big concern. Now, things, could he be better with another team next year? Absolutely. If you're the Patriots, would you take another shot? Absolutely not. I mean, would I take a shot if I had a team? Probably not. I mean, he's just a Band-Aid at best. And while he should be better than he was with the Patriots last year, I don't know that it's going to be substantially better, honestly, because you guys watched it, and he just didn't – it just felt like a guy who just couldn't – he just could never find his rhythm. He never got in rhythm with the Patriots.
You can follow him on Twitter, at Lance Zierlein, NFL.com draft analyst. Lance, we really appreciate you taking the time this morning, and take care.
Hey, can I shout out my old college roommate, Lonnie Elfbaum from Sharon, Mass?
Nice.
Absolutely.
Lonnie Elfbaum from Sharon, Mass. He was a Celtics fan, and he destroyed our room when Danny Ainge got traded to the Kings. Completely made a mess of our old dorm room. He was so pissed off that Danny Ainge got traded.
I like the passion.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lance.
He did have the passion. All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. Lance,
we should have Lonnie on next tomorrow.
Yeah.
Get him on.
Get
talk
a little
to
Celtic. A little
maybe
Celtics
he won't
breakdown.
Crush my dreams.
Yeah, it didn't take long for Lance to completely destroy your plans, huh?
Oh, he put Andy Hart right in his place.
He thinks both guys are going to be gone before you even pick.
Well, if you want me to take the positive out of that, you guys have been mocking me for my love for Jaylen Waddle because he, you know, didn't have a ton of production, wasn't consistent.
It's hurt.
I believe he said sixth best player in the draft. He has him
way up there.
I think he had Jaylen Waddle up there, too.
No, he said Micah Parsons was sixth.
Parsons was five or six, he said.
I think he said Waddle, too. Go back and listen to the tape. Bottom line, can I tell you something?
No, but what he did say, is that he thinks Smith could be the third receiver, which is interesting.
And I kind of agree with him on that. But
I think size is going to be an issue for a lot of NFL teams.
It should be, because I know they're set in their ways, and he's right. Like, drafting and size with a receiver, if you're little, nope, you're a second-round pick, or you're a late first. You can't be a top pick without being – now, you can look at Tyreek Hill and what he's done to the Chiefs' offense and
he'd probably go in the first
round. How about that guy? I freaking love talking draft, and I know it's not for everybody. Like, some people get, ice cream headaches, and they just want to mock the process.
Now's the time.
I freaking love it.
Lance is great at it, and –
He writes the bios for NFL.com. Like, I want people to make sure they know. He doesn't just mock. He doesn't just talk.
Right.
The bios that are written with pros and cons and personal details, he writes those. So, I mean, there's a lot of information going through his brain. I'm not saying he's the be-all, end-all talent evaluator, but there's a lot of information that goes through his brain as he does his job. And
I think he pretty much described why the Patriots struggle at drafting receivers. We've asked the question.
Aaron Dobson.
They've been so bad at it for a while, and it's these guys that, even if they're built like a prototypical wide receiver, a simple question, do they get open? The most,
which I don't understand, because what does Bill say? You know how Bill always likes to say,
get open and catch the ball.
Right.
Get
and
open
he drafts
and
all these guys that don't get open.
And he's right. Like, they identify Wes Welker. They see Welker playing sparingly for Miami, and they say, hey, let's get him, put him in the slot here to play with Brady. And Wes Welker was always open. Julian Edelman, when he's healthy, always open. These other guys that they put on the outside are covered like a blanket the entire game.
That's
and then
the key.
On top of it, you have Cam Newton, who doesn't exactly, as he says, you know, throw him open. You know, Deshaun Watson could throw you open. Russell Wilson can throw you open. He can't.
We saw that in the Houston game, didn't we? Where Deshaun Watson put on a clinic.
Oh yeah, just throwing darts. Guys are covered, open. And he's throwing, and they're catching
Unreal.
Passes. And so you have guys that just don't get open. Like, N'Keal Harry doesn't get open. It's
and that's where it's
amazing.
Weird, because I think the Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, even Deion Branch, even though he wasn't a slot receiver,
right.
he was the smaller, quicker, get-open guy.
Troy
they
Brown.
Found the ability over the years to do that. It's whatever they target, prioritize on more the outside receiver that they've had misses. Because Dobson's the first. When they drafted Harry, a lot of people, the first thing I thought of was Aaron Dobson. You start reading scouting reports, and like, he wins contested catches, but he doesn't create a lot of separation. That's what Aaron Dobson was sold to us as, and that starts to concern you. And you're in a league now. Maybe that used to be that position where it was like a possession receiver. Remember Brandon LaFell had a good season for them basically as a drive starter. He'd run 10 yards, turn around. Okay, we got a first down. We got a little momentum. Now there's a lot of outside guys that aren't possession guys. They are big plays, can get open, can beat man coverage, and that's been a blind spot for them for a while.
Interesting tweet a few minutes ago from Joe Banner. Used to be the president and CEO with the Eagles and the Browns, and you've heard the name before. He tweeted out, league is about to go through four of the more interesting weeks ever, and all the conversation is still about quarterbacks. They matter a lot, but the rest of the story is going mostly untold. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. It's going to be a great opportunity for smart teams. You've got so many teams who would have been up against the cap even if it was a normal cap year. It's not. So now you've got even more teams up against the cap. You're already seeing cap casualties falling by the wayside all around the league. You've got organizations attempting to trade guys before they have to just cut them and basically being unsuccessful in that regard. I think Joe Banner is right. A smart team, and we've always thought the Patriots were a pretty smart team, are going to have opportunities to make a lot of good changes for their organization beyond the quarterback position.
Yeah, we're hearing this from a lot of places right now. I think it was Diana
Russini yesterday
massacre,
said
massacre, and Michael Bidwell from the Cardinals.
Yep.
Seismic shift in talent is coming. This right here, as much as the quarterback thing has kind of been bad for the Patriots, as you're a fan and you're going through all these options, this is good news for the Patriots, because seismic shift means you're going from teams that are the haves to the have-nots. And for the first time ever, maybe it's good that the Patriots are a have-not right now. They have money, and they don't have talent. So if there's a seismic shift from them to somebody, they're in place to take advantage of that.
And as much as we mocked Belichick for, we had to do a reset here. We had to, because we sold out the last few years. As it turns out, they are one of the organizations, and there are others as well. The Dolphins are another one, who are uniquely positioned in this offseason to be able to take advantage of the problems that other teams have.
Now you got to do it. That's the next step. Yes, you have the budget. Now spend it wisely, make the right selections, pick the right, we started. Kyle Van Noy interest you, Kyle Rudolph interest you. There's going to be a lot of names that interest you. You got to be ready to pounce on the right name, the right fit, and, as he would say, the right mosaic, because they have so many needs. It's like you can't just fixate on throwing money at the tight end spot. Well, no, you need to throw it at the tight end, the wide receiver, the offensive line, the defensive line, linebacker, all across the board.
They may have to start with some of those defensive holes to fill, because some of the offensive holes to fill, decisions may be dependent on who you get at quarterback, and that may be delayed for a while.
Yes and no. I still think you go after tight ends. Like, tight ends are becoming available. Go
especially
get the tight
if Rudolph
ends.
Is interested.
Right. Yeah, and, yeah. and start to check no some of those boxes off. And I'll give you a little preview on what might be a column tomorrow morning on WEEI.
Good. I love when we get a little heads up on this.
We used to, you know, do the Fast Fry Friday in the old days.
Very popular.
You know how Belichick likes to say, control what you can control?
Yes.
Like, that's one of his, he tells players, what just control what you can control. Don't worry. Ignore the noise. Isn't that what he needs to do this offseason? Like, we all talk about quarterbacks. He's yeah. really not in control of that right now. There's guys that are
right.
either not being traded or, you know, Giardi had the report yesterday that nobody is really enamored with the quarterbacks that are available.
Yeah, and if you wait for your quarterback first, everybody else is going to be gone.
Right.
Noah's
so,
going to be gone. Rudolph's going to be gone.
Control
it. Gone.
You control. Yeah. First, you control who you re-sign, your own free agents. So
right.
pick your spots there. Figure out what you need to do there. Now you got guys that are cut on the open market, and free agency is – we're getting closer now. What are we, less than 2 weeks away now from free agency?
17th, right?
Yes. So you're going to be in control, and you have money. You have money to offer people, so you can control that situation. And then at some point, you got to figure out the quarterback situation, maybe when you have a little bit more of opportunity or options or control there. But control what you can control, and right now, that's other spots on the roster.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. A fan favorite in some circles, maybe not in others, has signed with the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. It's Dale and Keefe with Hart and Shime's Time to Trend.
Andy Hart is with Dale and Keefe every Tuesday and Thursday on WEEI.
Bring it a high drive to right field. Reddick going back to the warning track. This ball is going, and it is gone. A grand slam for Jackie Bradley Jr.
And Jackie swings, and he hits a high fly ball to right. This ball's back. This ball's gone. JBJ to the wall. He leaps, and he made the catch. I can't believe it. Jackie Bradley Jr. robbing Aaron Judge of a home run deep in the triangle.
Long run for Jackie Bradley Jr. He dives. He makes the catch. Oh, a marvelous catch. Jackie Bradley Jr. does it again.
Throughout this offseason, Heim Bloom has paid lip service to the fact that, well, we're keeping contact with Jackie Bradley Jr. We're still talking. We're checking to see where things stand. It's fairly clear that they had no intent on bringing Jackie Bradley Jr. back because he signs today with the Milwaukee Brewers, reportedly a two-year deal worth $24 million total, $12 million a year, which, frankly, is well within the range that the Red Sox could have thought about affording if they wanted to, and I don't think they did.
They didn't, and I just wonder, why didn't you trade him last year? You don't think anybody would have taken him for anything? Now, clearly the market spoke and said the league doesn't really value him a great deal, 2 years, $24 million. But I remember that was the question last year. It was a lost season for the Red Sox, a complete lost season. He was an impending free agent, and they held on to him. And it was the weirdest thing. We had Sam Kennedy on the show, and we were talking
leading
to him about
me
it.
To believe they were going to re-sign him, by the way.
He also allegedly, that he was super important to him.
If you're not going to deal him, it's because you want to keep him.
Yep. But you remember, this was in the aftermath of Mookie Betts being dealt. There was a lot of questions about how do other players feel about the Red Sox and just the sort of, you know, the idea of another black player being pushed out of town. That was a topic, right? And I remember asking Sam, and got sort of a weird answer. Like, was not trading Jackie Bradley Jr., did it have anything to do with the fact that he was black? And it was like, no, but we took everything into account, including that. And you're like, so... It was a really weird answer. I think that's why they kept him, but I don't understand. If you're going to trade Andrew Benintendi at his lowest for essentially a bag of balls and a couple of dart throws, why not trade Jackie Bradley last year if you weren't going to re-sign him this year? I think it makes zero sense. You could have gotten something. You couldn't have gotten
sure.
a couple of prospects. If Heim Bloom's goal is to rebuild the farm system and we need to be patient and all of this, why have, even if it's not, you know, a great asset in Jackie Bradley, he's a good defensive center fielder and he's a streaky hitter. You could have dealt him last year. The team was going nowhere. Send him to a contender or to somebody that might need him. Get a prospect or two. This makes no sense.
And you brought up race in regards to baseball and their roster. I think we were also at a tipping point place in this world where race and Black Lives Matter were a talking point. So he was sort of seen as the only black player in the Red Sox. The lad, like, can you trade that guy? It's Boston. Boston has its own history and issues and talking. Fenway Park has its own history and issues and talking points. There was a lot there, and that's why I do think race played a part. There's almost no doubt in my mind that race did play a part. And what you said, yeah, you could probably get a couple prospects, but to what end? Like, how does that balance out with how the PR aspect of it or whatever other aspect you're massaging?
Because if it was just about baseball, wouldn't he have been traded?
Yes.
Well, if they weren't going to re-sign him, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why when they didn't trade him, my first thought was, well, they want to bring him back.
Right.
And I would have been okay with that. Rich wouldn't have been okay
with
that.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, I wouldn't have been, like, kicking and screaming had you brought him back on just a two-year deal. You know, he's about to turn 31, so I'm sure he's still got some plenty of baseball left in him. I don't think that he's great. I think he's so streaky, and he makes highlight plays that he's a tough guy to properly rate. I feel like the town is kind of split. Either people think he's better than he is, or maybe you're like me and you think he's worse than he is. And the reality is he's probably somewhere in the middle.
Does he make sense for this team as currently built, constituted, where they're...
I don't think so.
I don't either. And I would also say, baseball world, small contract, right? 2 years, $24 million is nothing.
It's not. You're not going, oh my God, look at how he cashed
But
in.
You add but up a few
not
of those.
Nothing
that's why they're
in the
mess.
Red Sox offseason.
Yeah. Right.
It's something in the way they've treated this offseason and whatever they're trying to do financially. And on a good team, on a playoff contender, a World Series contender, you got a good lineup, you got a pitching staff, you want him to help your pitching staff in center field, you can bury his bat at the back end of the lineup. Like, I think he makes sense for a good team.
I'm with you.
This is a good, not great team, according to their manager. So
maybe that's a great team,
but I don't think there's a value long term to keeping him here. Like, I know people love him and he's the greatest center fielder ever, the greatest since Lynn and all that romantic stuff.
He's the best defensive center fielder of my Red Sox lifetime. I didn't see Tris Speaker. Can't go back that far.
For the Red Sox? Or
yeah,
just
I'm talking about
see,
I'm oh. saying no, I'm talking about he's the
see,
best defensive Red
yeah,
Sox
I don't
center
see
fielder.
It.
I thought Lynn was, but this guy's much better than Lynn.
I honestly don't think Jackie Bradley's ever been the best defensive center fielder on his own team. That Mookie Betts is better. And Kevin Pillar last year was better. At least Pillar's had a better career. Maybe he's kind of winding down.
Yeah, he is.
You know, but Pillar was much better over the course of his career. I mean, there were times where in the AL East, Jackie Bradley was maybe the fourth best defensive center fielder. Now, he was very good, and he replaced guys like Johnny Damon and Jacoby Ellsbury and Coco Crisp, who were all fast but couldn't throw, didn't make a lot of play. Like, they were average to poor outfielders. And then you get this guy in there, and you're like, holy smokes. And then you have Jackie Bradley and Mookie Betts. And I think it started to get overrated because you hear a lot of people say, well, they're really going to miss having a great outfield because Fenway Park, and it's so tough, and guys are going to be butchering balls. I'm pretty sure Manny Ramirez, Johnny Damon, and Trot Nixon won a World Series. Were those guys electric outfielders, or could they all just hit?
I'm not sure their pitching staff and lineup will be quite as good as it was back then. So some of that may balance out.
Oh, don't get
me
wrong. You want Gold Glovers at every position, but you're not going to. I think if Bradley was the best defensive shortstop in all of baseball, I feel like you could make a bigger argument for it. Be like, all right, well, this guy you need to keep. The best, and I don't even think he is the best, but one of the best defensive center fielders in the game is nice, but I don't think it's a must-have, and you certainly don't need to overpay for it.
This is the obligatory Cam Newton disclaimer type thing that we play, you know, at least once a day to get ourselves okay with the legal authorities. So I'll add my Jackie Bradley Jr. legal disclaimer here. As good a guy as I've ever dealt with over there, he and his wife were magnificent in the community, just a wonderful guy. Everybody loves him. Everybody in the clubhouse, everybody in the organization loves him. I'm not saying that's why you re-sign him. I'm saying this isn't a jerk. And you say, get him out of here.
Well, and that's the same thing with, when, I'm criticizing or upset with Chris Sale's performance on the mound. It's just baseball. Like, these guys can all be the best guys in the world, and that will be a dent. You know, if you lose a lot of really good guys, I'm sure that could affect you at some point. But just the baseball part of it, he was so wildly streaky. Like, he was the John Starks of hitters. It was crazy. There'd be a week where you couldn't get him out, and then there'd be a week where he'd struck out every at-bat. It was unbelievable how streaky the guy was. Always good in the outfield, but at the plate, streaky. And I don't know. I think Andy hit on it, though. For this team, where they're at right now and where they're going to be at for the next couple of years, if you're going to spend $12 million, throw it in the pitching staff somewhere, wouldn't you? Like, I don't think this isn't a guy that they're not a playoff team with him, but with him they are a playoff team. Like, it's not that kind of impact.
I also think he's a modern baseball player in that the second he had a diving catch, it was like all over Twitter, the Red Sox would promote it.
And then MLB would suspend those accounts.
Yeah, but that sways your mind. Like, when you see that, this may be me, and the lovers are probably going to hate me. I think he did it on purpose at times. I think he set up a diving catch. He could have caught it on the run, but like, if I slow up a little bit, I can kind of make this a diving catch.
Oh, yeah. A bit of a showman, sure.
And I like that. I actually have no problem, especially when you're not a very good hitter. Might as well play up your strengths, and you might as well make... Yeah, I know I'm 0 for my last 37, but did you see that catch I just made? Put that on your highlight reel. So the truth is in the middle. He's not as bad or as lowly ranked as some of the haters want to put it, and he's not, in my opinion, as great as some of his promoters want to make it.
Right now, your center fielder, I think, is going to almost by default have to be Alex Verdugo.
Yes.
Who I liked last year, by the way. I'm not... saying I don't like him, but
like a sneaky under the radar good player, and you're like,
it's going to be a big drop off defensively, I think.
Yes,
yeah,
especially,
but will it matter?
Especially at Fenway,
it'll be an improvement at the plate.
Yes,
right. Yep. Verdugo, better hitter than Bradley, and you know maybe he'll start to learn it. I'm sure he'll have some. There'll be a bit of a learning curve there. It's a big center field. It's kind of tricky, you know, especially in deep center, and at times you're going to have to play the ball off the wall and left depending on where you're lined. All that stuff. Like, he'll have to figure that out. But again, this team was really, really successful with Crisp, Damon, and Ellsbury playing center field for years. So I think they can get by with a non-Gold Glove center fielder.
And I also hope that it matters. Because in my opinion, if we're sort of detailing the defense in center field, it means a lot of other things have fallen into place.
I was going to say, I think
you know who your starting
pitcher
is, right? That probably means we know who the starting pitcher is most nights, where last year we didn't. We were talking about TBD or some guy you've never heard of. Like, if we're detailing the difference that the center field defense is making, I think they're having a pretty good year.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I liked him. I will miss seeing him play defensively. I agree with Rich that offensively, I mean, he could take an 0 for a month.
Crazy.
It felt like it, and then he could literally hit .350 for a month.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's funny because last year it was actually, and I know batting average is a dinosaur stat,
I know,
but whatever.
We're just using it as
whatever.
An example.
Well,
for this
I'm a
point,
dinosaur.
Last year, I know, I'll still look at the guy's batting average. Call me crazy. He hit .283 last year, which was far and away his best year.
Yep.
But it was also 55 games because of the ridiculous season that it was. So if he played an extra month, it probably would have gone back down to the .230 or whatever that he normally is.
But it is crazy. What did he have a couple of years ago, like a 30-game hitting streak?
Yeah, he had like the longest hitting streak in team history or something insane.
And then you see another week where it's like you might as well give him a tennis racket because he's missing the ball by 3 feet. And I find that remarkable that we know how much these athletes prepare and everything that goes into it. And we know he's a great athlete. And he has the capability for short spans to be a great hitter. For it to go so south him at times is very strange.
He one of those hot months that he had, it might have been, was it the hitting streak month? Was in the first half of the season, so he's got an all-star team out of it because he was so hot. And then he also, not that he hit for a high average, but he drove in a lot of runs and hit some home runs in the ALCS, and he was the MVP. Back in 18. So the guy definitely had a pretty big impact. Played a lot of games for the Red Sox, but again, where they're at right now, you know, good for him. Go somewhere else, make some money, probably play for a better team, and you know they'll have to make do without him.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. There are some rules changes being proposed in the National Football League. Some of which you might like, some of which you might not. We'll get to those in just a couple of minutes. Dale and Keefe with Hart Sports Radio WEEI.
More of Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart on WEEI.
So there are some proposed rules changes coming up in the National Football League. They've all obviously got to be voted on, and I'm not suggesting these things are necessarily going to pass, but there are some interesting rules changes proposed. One, apparently, according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, endorsed by Bill Belichick, the Baltimore Ravens have proposed what they call a revolutionary spot-and-choose overtime procedure, which sounds a little complicated. Here's the idea. Team picks the spot of the ball to start overtime. The other team chooses whether to play offense or defense. So, for instance, Team A says, offense's own 20-yard line. The opponent would then choose whether to play offense from their own 20 or to play defense from their own 20.
So it turns into just like a bartering system?
Yeah, in effect.
We can score from the 1-yard line.
What it does is it eliminates the coin toss, basically.
Yeah.
You don't, and because a lot of people have said, oh, well, the coin toss decides overtime, which isn't necessarily true, but it would be sudden death, by the way. If they did
right.
under this proposal,
yeah.
And again, Belichick proposes that it continues beyond sudden death. He doesn't like the sudden death part of it, but the pick and choose part of the rule he seems to like.
And I know in that story it said like the 13 or the 14-yard line is the breaking point or something.
Yeah.
And
for the 14 or beyond, the team choosing offense or defense will be more likely to take the ball.
So the old school, if I say, okay, 20-yard line, just like the old touchback, the offense is most likely, yeah, I want to be on offense. I'll take
play,
the ball at the
yeah.
20. You know,
I think it also depends on what your team is, right? Like how good your offense is. If your offense is great, we'll take it at the 1. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And that's where you get into the devils in the details. And I'd be really interested. I mean, for our purposes, sports
yeah.
talk, radio.
Oh, it gives us so much more to talk about.
The analytics,
yeah.
the emotional coaches, you know, the Billy O'Briens or the Bruce Arians and what they do, what Bill and Ernie Adams would do. The analysis of this at, you know, hindsight, 2020 analysis would be a lot of fun. I would be interested in how they also explain it on TV. I'd be intrigued to see some of the color commentators.
You got to get Ed Hockley back out. He'll explain the whole thing to everybody.
So now the Ravens, their proposal is it would be sudden death.
Right.
Okay. Belichick would prefer what he reportedly favors is the game would continue for another 7 minutes and 30 seconds without the sudden death component. Whoever leads at the end of the extra time would be the winner. And again, you could end in a tie if that's what happened.
So, yeah, I mean... I would eliminate ties. I do. It is interesting though. So I guess so. Well, in this case, what the home team or the road team just picks the yard line, and then the other team will say whether we want the ball or not.
You have a coin toss, don't you?
No, they're eliminating the coin toss.
No coin toss. So if you have the ball, yeah.
So who picks the ball? Who picks the ball? The home team or the
road? No. You. So
I mean, who picks the placement?
Oh, the yardage. Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody has to have
either home or road, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I assume there was a coin toss that gave you the right to pick the placement, and then the other team has the right to then pick.
Yeah, it does
not. But wouldn't everybody basically pick the 15, 20, or 25?
Well, I mean,
because you have to be ready for the other team to take the ball, so you're not going to say
Mike Ditka, Steve Spurrier, Buddy Ryan. I mean, Rex Ryan. I feel like there's an opening here for somebody to be 1 yard line.
The 50. Like the somebody. Other one. Wait a minute. What?
50. I like the 50. I feel like I 50 am I yard line? Criticized right in the middle somewhere.
But
I split
could
the
kick
difference.
A field goal, though.
Well,
so
that's
I
the problem.
Just think
one first down and the game's over.
The NFL is kind of morphing into college football anyway. They like a lot of points. They're running
yep.
a lot of college offenses. Just run the college overtime. Super exciting, and it's fair. There's no complaint. We didn't get the ball. We didn't get the ball. You got the ball. You got the ball.
And it's 11:30, and we're still going.
And you're still playing. And guess what?
275 to 270 or
no
something
ties.
Is the final
Keep
score.
Playing. Light it up. That Chiefs-Rams game a couple years ago, where they scored 100 points combined. Great.
Yeah,
one of the
eight
great
overtime tilt
game.
For the Patriots.
I feel like they'll miss their broadcast window.
Keep going. I mean, this is
It would be fun if all you care about is offense and playmaking. There's certainly an argument to be made for that. But how long could it go at the NFL level? And what does college do, the third or the second?
I think the third one you got to go for two, right?
So
you have to go for
my
two.
My guess
after
is
the
it wouldn't
touchdown.
Go as long as I'm making it out to be. But
no,
some of those college games do. There has been some 5-6
yeah.
type college games.
Yep. Good.
It would be interesting. It'd be fun.
So the Buffalo Bills have submitted a rules change. And I really like this one, to be honest with you. It would bar interviews for front office and coaching positions until after the conference title games and would bar hirings until after the Super Bowl.
I like it.
That's what it
I
should
do too.
Be. That's what it really
yeah.
should be.
Absolutely.
You know, because you were wondering, like, some of these teams go so early, they're like, well, we're not going to interview Eric Bieniemy this year, or we're not, you know, we can't hire him until afterwards, and we got to get this head start, because if we have a head coach 2 weeks earlier, you know we're going to be in such a better spot when the season
right.
rolls around. It's like, no, you're not. Get the best guy. Give these guys an opportunity, too, where I guess in this scenario they would still do interviews while they were still in it, but really only the two Super Bowl teams. Plus, you have that extra week in between anyway, so I feel like that's the most fair. And I'm kind of surprised that that's not the way that it is. You can't be changing players in that time.
Right.
Why can you change coaches?
So I'm all for it. I think the Bills proposal makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah,
you can't interview people till after the conference championships. You can't hire anybody until after the Super Bowl. That seems fair to
yeah,
me.
That one's
yeah,
good.
And the idea is to get the right guy, right? To the,
yep.
the best, not only for the team, but the best interest for the league is for the yeah. right guy to land in the right place, right? The rising tide lifts all boats. You want to have more good teams, not more bad teams. And I feel I've never really understood some of the time crunch that teams put on it. It's like, no, we got to get this done. We're going to fire the guy now, and I want to coach by the end of the week. And you're like, do you get married like that? Do you decide to have a kid like that? Like, the major decisions in life, nobody does that quickly, but these multi-billion-dollar franchises are just, boom, got to get going. Yeah, combine's only X weeks away, and we got to start the process and this. No, how about we get it right?
I think
in the end, if you get it right 3 weeks later than you originally planned, you'll be much happier than getting it wrong very quickly, because guess what? If you get it wrong, 2 years from now, you can get it wrong again in early January. How about we get it right?
Mm-hmm. And then we'll give you the third rules proposal that's being made, and Belichick is going to love this one, because Belichick thinks every single play should be reviewable, everything. Judy Batista, NFL Network, says the owners could be looking to vote on whether to make roughing the passer subject to replay review.
Oh my gosh, that's just stupid.
I like it. I don't know what the limitations would be, but there's some really bad roughing the passer calls. That's one of the worst calls in football at times.
Yeah.
And to fix those, I'd be all for it. Now, I'm keying the limitations.
Here's what the problem is for me. And I'm slowly but surely becoming a non-replay guy anyway in all sports. But here's the
other
issue I have.
Yeah, Dale. Welcome.
The other issue I have is coaches using it as a timeout during a key drive late in the game. Yeah, you want to review that, please? And in effect, calm your team down. All right, everybody, let's get our act together here. It becomes another timeout for a coach.
Well, but depending on what the situation already. Is, I was going to say, but then you lose your timeout, and
right.
then depending on what the situation is, the clock might start anyway. So it's not technically another timeout. I think so much stuff is reviewable anyway. Just add the rest of it, and then coaches and their guy up in their Ernie Adams have to figure out what is worth challenging. So they definitely should. Like, how many times have you been watching a game and you're wondering why the coach isn't challenging something, and then, you know, Jim Nance or flags on other stupid stuff. So Belichick's been on that for a while. Challenge everything. If you're using it, challenge everything. Now, again, you don't have unlimited challenges. You can't do that. We're not
right.
trying to play a four-hour game, but get it right. Like, we're talking about with the coaches. Same thing with on the field. Get the stuff
but
right.
But they won't. You know they won't. Like, we went through that with pass interference.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where there was clearly an overwhelming, you know, edict down from the league that it has to be worst of worst to be called. Because you're like, yeah, that's pass interference. I've seen less than that called. But they're never going to overturn it. I think it'll be the same with most roughing the passers. Because we've seen it explained over the years. Like, you don't agree with them. And then the next day they explain, no, this was the right call because the angle of his head
right.
at the time. And it's like, okay, and I'll go get a snack while you tell mm-hmm. me that what I saw is what I didn't see.
Now, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, talking about this, has what makes the most sense to me. And the way to fix all of this stuff is just have what he calls a sky judge. Add another official to the crew, the guy upstairs who's looking at all the replays, who's looking at all the stuff. You're not connecting back to New York. You
right.
got a guy upstairs who can buzz down and say, fellas, you missed the roughing the passer penalty there. Let's go back.
And that was the XFL's. Remember, they had that guy, but they had him mic'd up, right? You
right.
could hear live
yeah,
what
cool.
he was saying. And I don't know if the NFL would ever go in that fully in that direction.
Mic'd up?
But that,
hell no.
Well,
Roger
I liked
Goodell would die first, right?
I liked the – remember the original college football, that's how it worked? And it was like way back in the day, I think, in some stadiums the guy had a TiVo. And there was a guy in a booth mm-hmm. who just watched
yeah.
it. He would pause if anything he ever deemed. And they were really good at it. Now, I think they've actually gotten away from that, and the college has gotten slower and less good. But the original college football replay rule was essentially that. A guy with the ability to stop the game when it warranted. He had the technology to watch whatever he needed. I like that idea. My guess is I'll still complain about it later because I won't like the call
sure.
and the way it's actually executed. But that's why, Dale, welcome to my side of the street. Just get rid of slow motion replay altogether.
And it's a side angle to this, but last night in the Bruins game, the Bruins challenged a Caps goal that was ultimately overturned because the Capitals were offside. Now, the Bruins were the beneficiary of the call.
That
and I swear
stinks.
To God, I swear to God, I looked at it 8 times.
Yeah.
I could not tell.
No, yeah.
I mean, I defied anybody to tell me there was a definitive look at how the play was offside, and yet they took the Caps goal away for it.
Right. It's right. unreal. And didn't they even muddy that water this year? If the skate is in the air but breaks the plane now, you don't even have to drag it. You can have it up in the air as long as it's still over the plane of the blue line. Like,
well, and this was one of those cases where the puck, when it was flipped into the offensive end, was literally flipped 25, 30 feet in the air. So it is up in the air above the player, and you've got all the empty black seats and the tarps as the background. You couldn't see the puck.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I had no idea where the puck was, and yet somehow they knew that, oh, yeah, he was offside. You got to take the goal away. I'm at the point now where I don't like replays for anything.
I hate it. It ruins every game. It's a little bit like the flag thing I used to say, the backside holding. You no longer enjoy plays because you kind of hesitate for a minute. You wait to see what's the penalty or is there going to be a replay? Can we really actually have our celebration? I heard Gronk talking about it in the Super Bowl. I think his second touchdown, he wasn't sure he could celebrate because he saw like a backside flag and then he realized it was on the defense. And I really like sports are supposed to be like immediate gratification, like celebration, and replay and all that just kind of sucks some of the life.
And you've got officials making calls based on what they think the replay is going to do.
Right, which I hate.
Oh, just yeah.
Call what you want to call. And that's huge in football. Oh, just let it play out. There's a loose ball. Let it play out because we can fix it on replay if it's wrong. But if we blow it dead, we can't fix it. And you got like all these guys half running down the field and they're not sure. Do I keep running? Am I chasing this guy? Is he actually running? Yeah, it stinks.
Now, Belichick is the guy, as we said, who has advocated that everything should be reviewable.
Yep. On a limited basis. You still have whatever your two or three.
You can't review 30 plays.
Which
a game,
I love because that actually adds the idea of, because you see it these days, wait, you're challenging 2 yard spot in the first quarter? Like, you don't think you might want to save that challenge for
something
that's actually a big deal?
But I feel like that's kind of what it should be. Like, I think it's either all or nothing. Like, who's in favor of some of it?
Right.
Like, if you guys want to get rid of it, like that, okay, that's your opinion and you want it out. If you're in favor of replay, you can't be in favor of some replay. Like, it's all of it. Throw it all in there.
Yeah, and I'm at the point where I want to get rid
of
all replay.
Because the thing that pushes me to that point is I've seen way too many times where replay doesn't fix the egregious mistake.
It muddies the waters.
Right.
You see the replay and you go, wait a minute, they can't see what I'm looking at here and they don't make that call?
At least in the old days, or if you eliminate replay, I can fall back on, it's a sport, it's officiated by humans, human error, it's fast-paced, the guy made an honest mistake. But when it goes to slow motion replay and they tell me something different than I think I'm seeing, doesn't that lead you to believe, like, what are we doing here?
Like, yeah, but I feel like those just stand out more. I feel like, you know, like the Dez Bryant catch or some of those catch, those ones you remember more. Whereas in the course of a game, there'll be a time where a guy traps a ball, the ref thinks they caught it first down, they run up, and then and we're like, it's obvious. They go to the booth, they're like, all right, it's not incomplete, and you just forget about it. I think that happens a lot where if you got rid of replay altogether, there'd be all kinds of issues.
Yeah, but wouldn't they just average out? Like, didn't they get along with it for decades and years? Like, mistakes were made, and then
or
you go back to
the
huddle.
Because we didn't have all the camera angles back in the day either. You didn't know. You're just sort of like, it happened so fast. You're like, it must have been a catch. Move on.
Exactly.
To the next
Let's go back to not knowing. It's better that way.
No,
ignorance
I
is bliss.
Still be a catch.
Ignorance is bliss. I want to be ignorant.
It's how you've lived your life. So change now. 617-779-7937. We'll get to the calls, back to the calls with you guys in just a couple of minutes, and we'll look at some of those players who are more and more becoming available for Bill Belichick to shop from. It's Dale and Keefe with Hart Sports Radio, WEEI.